Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with John Cox, Chief Financial Officer at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Pete Boyer. John, through the new OMB Improved Credit Management Initiative, agencies are set to strengthen the way they award and service loans, manage portfolios, and collect debts. Can you tell us a little bit about your department's management and strategy for improving its credit management capability? And what has the department done with respect to credit management?
The department has one large piece of its business that is under credit management and credit reform. We actually don't make loans. As I mentioned earlier, we actually secure and guarantee loans. So FHA has that function. They have approximately $450 billion of mortgages that are outstanding. So it's a big portfolio. One of the things we've done over the last several years is improved our modeling for loan loss reserves. Obviously, a topic that's very timely in today's world, but we have improved, for example, added FICO scores. This year, we actually added FICO scores down to the individual loan level. So, again, that's a bit arcane, perhaps, or something an economist would get excited about. But the bottom line is, for HUD, it actually is giving us better ability to judge and estimate what our risk is. We have a couple of other areas that help us manage our risk. We have Appraiser Watch. We have Credit Watch. Those are automated technologies that allow us to, when someone is going out to do an appraisal or when someone is actually selling a property that's been foreclosed, and finally someone who in the normal process of underwriting HUD FHA business, we have programs that monitor their scoring, and there's a scoring system. For example, in the appraisal area, we have a system that allows us to track. And so we can, if one appraiser, for example, consistently grades high, we go in and sort of flag that and we'll do a check. Or if we have one appraiser who sort of grades it at a medium level and there's a couple of areas in property that he, you know, grades high and then it comes back down again, there are all kinds of algorithms there we can run to ensure that they have a good, healthy system. And more importantly, that those appraisals are accurate and appropriately done. Similarly, with Credit Watch, we actually watch the various banks and institutions who are engaging in these loans and underwriting these loans. And so we can look at their default rate, for example. That's an easy one. We can look at particular trends and patterns. And again, that's all designed to help us manage the government's risk. This portfolio remains very strong. The president recently announced FHA Secure, which is a program to help some of the folks who have been involved in the subprime market, particularly those who have adjustable rate mortgages that have reset. It's interesting to watch where in the past, as you observed the market in the last several years, FHA had in fact lost market share. Now it's sort of cool to be with FHA again, primarily because a lot of those other funding sources have dried up. And obviously FHA's goal is not about market share. It's about helping low and moderate income people get the housing that they need. And so we're constantly working to improve the credit management of that program.
Certainly a very topical issue these days. We spent some time talking about the challenges of improper payments, but there is another challenge, which is around the transferring of money between agencies. Now, GAO has repeatedly identified intra-governmental transactions as an issue when they perform their annual audits of federal government finances. As the leader of the CFO Council's Central Reporting Transformation Team, could you tell us more about the government-wide effort to improve its ability to properly account, report, and reconcile these intragovernmental activities?
Certainly. I co-chair that Central Reporting Transformation Team with Ken Carfine of Treasury, and we are working in a variety of ways to make improvements to the intragovernmental activity. Fundamentally, I think that the improvements will come in a couple of areas. Number one is visibility and accountability. We have provided a new watch list to the CFO Council to identify those who have chronic out-of-balance situations with intergovernmental dealing between each other. Secondly, OMB has started a process where they are actually bringing in those particular organizations to work on corrective action plans. How do you solve this? What are the fundamental issues? That's number two. Number three, I'm leading a team specifically on buy-sell transactions. In other words, when one agency buys a good or a service from another, we're looking at ways to improve the reporting of that. that, how that happens. But again, as I mentioned, fundamentally, it's a business process issue. And so we're looking at various technology solutions. We're looking at the fundamental issues and why they arise. Some of those issues can be because of accounting differences. Some of those differences can be because one agency treats it a different way from an accounting standpoint. Some of it is just simply it's difficult in large organizations to know who the right person is. So we have not put forth our proposed solutions, and we look to do that in the spring timeframe. But again, I believe it's going to be a combination of improved business processes, improved technology around those business processes, and improved reporting so that people at my level actually realize it's going on. It's not a very sexy topic, to be totally honest with you. It's not something, you know, it's going to be the top of people's radar screen. But as you mentioned, it is a material weakness in the government-wide financial statements, and I believe we can solve this problem. I'm also sensitive from the technology standpoint that I don't think we need to write a multi-hundred-million-dollar program to fix this. There have been a couple of efforts in that vein in the past, and they've not succeeded. I think the primary reason they haven't succeeded is we have to have a realization not only of the current budget realities, but also the fact that many of us are going to have legacy systems for a long, long time, either because they work and they're going to continue to work, or because you can't get enough funding, or because could be a variety of reasons why. So I think we have to use today's modern technologies, web-based technologies and process-based technologies to help us understand when a particular transaction – and let me give you one quick example. Currently, when agencies are trading with each other, there's a system that Treasury has to do that called IPAC. IPAC basically is how you access the bank account of the other agency. Today, the way that system works, nothing wrong with it, is the business process is if I've bought a service from you and I'm now – you're going to send me an invoice, you literally go in, pull the money out, and get paid. And certainly I recognize that agencies need to get paid, but you literally don't have to notify me that you have done that. That's not a great business process. There's nothing wrong with the technology. The fundamental technology is fine. There just needs to be a recognition that I need to understand that when you're coming into my bank account effectively at Treasury as a federal agency, you need to let me know and you need to let me know what it's for. So I think that's one example of sort of a first step along that process where there's a notification to the agencies of the back and forth nature of these transactions. And obviously when you multiply that times hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands and hundreds of thousands of transactions, it becomes very difficult and it's understandable why we have the issue we have. It's approximately a $90 or $100 billion out-of-balance problem as of last fiscal year. But we're working to solve it. I give Ken Carfine at Treasury a lot of credit. They're working on the fiduciary side of this particular problem. Fiduciary means I'm holding some assets for someone else, which Treasury obviously does. They've made some very good progress on this area, and they'll report on that later this year to reduce that out-of-balance problem. And just simply by tackling it, looking at it, focusing on it, they're able to do that. And then, of course, the next step, which we just chatted about recently in a CFO council meeting, is that's great, reducing the balances, but then how do you make the business improvements and the process improvements so that those balances don't grow in the future?
So it's really more about business rules than it is about technology.
That's correct. And obviously, we have published the CFO Council under its guidance of OMB have published business rules, intergovernmental business rules. We need to make sure we have the proper mechanisms to enforce that. We need to make sure from a business process that the right people get engaged at the right time to make sure that the programmatic issues that are being focused on, you know, buying X and selling Y, are dealt with. But even the mundane issues of what account, how it's booked, when you're going to book it, how are you going to, you know, if it's a service, how are you going to accrue the amount that you've done, those kind of issues are, you know, sort of the blocking and tackling of how you get that done. So I applaud the great efforts that have gone into developing those business and intergovernmental rules. Shortly, there'll be a dispute resolution committee to help resolve some of those issues. So those are all, I view, of fundamental building blocks to ultimately helping us solve this problem.
John, one of the administration's key initiatives is creating a federal government that is accountable, results-oriented, and appropriately aligned with strategic goals. Having worked in both public and private sectors, could you tell us how federal managers can effectively manage an ever-increasing blended workforce composed of contractors and federal workers? And what are some of the key differences intrinsic to these core groups?
Well, I think fundamentally all organizations, and it's true in the private sector as well as the public sector, are there's been a shift towards more contracting. Outsourcing is a commonly used word, sometimes pejoratively, but it's a commonly used word. What I think you have to do fundamentally is you have to start, first of all, with a strong contract with clearly defined service level agreements. That's critical. You don't know if you've been successful and the contractor doesn't know if they've actually done what you're supposed to do if you don't have a clearly defined set of service level agreements. Secondly, I think project management is key. That's a big shift when you're going from someone who's actually doing the work to now someone who's managing someone who's doing the work. And in many cases, that may require a different skill set because project management is different than doing the work yourself. So I think that's a key that's got to be done. I think the core staff have to understand, or the agency staff, the department staff have to understand the business functions. We talked earlier about succession planning. As people that have that years and years of experience roll off, you've got to develop that younger staff, not younger in age necessarily, younger in time with the agency, that understand what the program and the programmatic pieces of the business are. And then finally, obviously a distinction you have to deal with is typically you have unionized workforce and those rules that you have to work with on the agency side, and you may or may not have that on the contractor side. So that just provides a set of issues you have to deal with, not necessarily good or bad. It's just the reality of having to work in that environment.
Now, on a somewhat related topic, can you address the coordination amongst the different C-suite leaders? How important is the coordination collaboration among the organization's chiefs, the CFO, the CIO, the chief human capital officer? And could you elaborate on your successful collaboration within HUD?
Sure. I was fortunate when I joined HUD that the four service areas, the CFO, the CIO, the chief human capital officer, and the chief acquisition officer, we're meeting on a Monday morning basis. We meet every morning at 8:30. We don't necessarily have a set agenda. And the purpose of those meetings is just to coordinate what's coming up in the week, give people a heads up, work to solve particular issues. One I would give you a specific one that we worked on was after the hurricanes in 2005, one of the recommendations that came out of that relief effort was that we really didn't have a nationwide database of apartments. There were many individual pieces and some particular geographic areas had it, but in that situation where obviously we had a tremendous need for a lot of people to relocate quickly, we had to develop this national locator system. And so we worked together, the CFO to get the funding, CIO to do the technology, working together with the chief acquisition officer to get that done. We wanted to make sure that we got that done in a quick, timely manner. So that's just one example of how we worked together collaboratively. And fortunately, I was able to walk into a great system that already existed when I came to HUD.
John, you mentioned Katrina, and many of our listeners may not recognize the importance of the role that HUD played in responding to natural disasters, especially Katrina. Could you elaborate on HUD's role in such disaster relief efforts, and more specifically, what HUD has done to ensure the proper use of funds during such events?
Certainly. We have a major part to play in the recovery of the Gulf. As I mentioned in the beginning, our annual budget is about $36.9 billion. HUD requested and the states requested and working at the president's request, Congress provided an additional $16.7 billion to provide one of the largest housing recovery programs in U.S. history. HUD manages those programs through our Community Development Block Grant program. And as I mentioned earlier in CPD, that can be for low-income housing, regular housing. It can be for infrastructure, all types of programs. And each of the states that were impacted with Katrina, Rita, and Wilma have presented plans to the departments. Those plans have been approved. We have tried to waive a lot of the regulatory requirements at the request of the President and Congress to get the money down there and get it working as quickly as we can. So we are involved in a lot of different stages. We have controls in place. The states have controls in place. The localities have controls in place. Well, we continue to adapt to that and manage to that as time goes on. We created, as part of Katrina and Wilma and Rita, the disaster voucher program to temporarily help house thousands of families who lived in public housing or HUD-assisted housing and were displaced. We recently extended that program, given the pace of recovery in the Gulf area. And then beginning in November of 2008, HUD will assume responsibility for long-term rental assistance through the Disaster Assistance Housing Program, currently being run by FEMA. FEMA typically, obviously, is short-term in nature. This, given the magnitude of this disaster, this has lasted longer than would be their typical time frame. And so we will, again, assume responsibility as a department for those long-term housing needs of those folks, effective in November of this year.
Great. What does the future hold for the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development? We will ask John Cox, Chief Financial Officer at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.